Hey, Lindsay, it's Lewis.
Hey, you're on the air, Lewis. Thanks for checking in this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
For sure. And you just got back from Standing Rock, huh?
Yeah, I just arrived back, flew in from Bismarck yesterday.
Yesterday morning.
When we left, it was negative 17.
Holy gosh. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine what negative 17 feels like. I've never been in weather like that. How was your experience there?
It was amazing. It was awesome. It was powerful. So for everybody who doesn't know, my name is Lewis Gordon. I work as program officer for the Seventh Generation Fund. We're located in Arcata. We've been around for 4 years, and we give small grants and some nonprofit technical support to Native community organizing projects. So the kind of people that were mobilized and called out to Standing Rock from reservations and communities all over the country to answer that call. When people of Standing Rock asked them to come out and support and get on the front lines to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline, those are our people. We support that kind of organizing, and we had literally, just through our organization connections, knew hundreds and hundreds of individuals that we've worked with throughout the past couple of decades that were out there over the past few months.
And Lewis, were you at Standing Rock this past Sunday? It seemed like there was a definite turn in events that happened this Sunday. Were you there at that time?
I was, yeah. I was there when the announcement was made that the Army Corps of Engineers denied the easement to drill under the Missouri River at Lake Oahe. And there was a celebration like I've never seen before. There was thousands and thousands of people. I would say between 10,000 and 14,000 people at camp that day. Those numbers were really pumped up because there were about 4,000 veterans that were set to deploy the next day on Monday. So there was thousands of veterans. There was a lot of people that came in because it seemed like things were coming to a head with Corps of Engineers and the state of North Dakota issuing threats and warnings and announcements about either stopping people from getting out to camp and making it illegal to be at the camp, the main camp, Ochetti Sharkoe Camp, which is on Army Corps of Engineers land. So they were saying that they were going to fine people $1,000 for just being at the camp. And they were also threatening eviction, and then later said that they weren't threatening eviction. So it was all very political, and it was all very threatening, and there was a lot of fear tactics being employed by the state of North Dakota and the Army Corps of Engineers. So yeah, it was amazing being there on that day. It was, a lot of people were really excited. There was a lot of disbelief, too, because there's so much buildup. But I can say that from my opinion, I think that the veterans self-mobilizing to go stand with the people of Standing Rock, to put themselves spiritually and physically on the front lines, to take the brunt of the opposing forces for the water protectors, that was really huge, and things going down the way they did. I know that North Dakota, the state troopers, the local sheriff's office, they didn't really know how to handle and didn't want to handle the public relations situation of them firing gas canisters and rubber bullets at uniformed veterans of the U.S. military.
Yeah, that movement itself was that mobilization, and it was a self-mobilization of veterans, it seemed like a very profound movement. And I wonder, how did it change the dynamic of the camp? Because you were there as the veterans began to move in. Did that shift anything?
Yeah, so there was a lot of things that happened between Sunday and Wednesday. So the timeline of what happened is the easement was announced Sunday. Sunday, it was probably about 10 degrees. It was sunny. It was nice weather. On Monday, in the morning, the roads were still open, but a blizzard hit around noon on Monday. Like, I've never been in blizzard conditions before, but it is, I'll never forget it. Serious and driving wind, the wind chill factor the snow, like just walking around, not being able to see, like because without having goggles or anti-fog glasses, just because of the snow stinging your eyeballs. So conditions got really bad, the weather conditions, on Monday, which is the day that the veterans were set to deploy. The blizzard conditions closed down the roads. Everything went on to full lockdown mode at some of the gyms, local gyms, Cannonball Gym, some of the public facilities, just like school gyms, down on the next reservation south, Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation. So people were stuck everywhere. So there's all these thousands and thousands of people who had just come in the day before or who were arriving that day. They got stuck at their deployment points or got stuck in gyms or got stuck at the hotels or got stuck at camp and couldn't get out because the roads were completely impassable. Visibility on the highway, 1806, visibility was down to maybe 5 or 10 feet, just extremely dangerous. Snow drifts, ice everywhere. It was really bad. And so I was staying at Prairie Nights Casino, which is just only a couple miles away from main camp. The casino turned into a refugee center for like 3 days, for 2.5 days. There were thousands of people over their capacity to house and take care of with their regular staff. And also the staff was stuck there too. So, you know, they were like sleeping at working in shifts, sleeping under their desks in the back offices. People were sleeping in the pavilion, which is like the event center. So luckily, everything worked out. Nobody was left out in the cold. People were sheltered and warm and amazingly able to be fed. I was really surprised that the hotel didn't run out of food, actually. But people were sleeping in hallways, sleeping in the lobby, just trying to find a place to stay was really stressful for a lot of people. People were sleeping like 10 to a room in some places. It was really incredible. So to answer, you're asking about, did that change the...
I was asking if the veterans' presence actually changed the dynamic of the water protectors and what it felt like at the camp. Did it feel like maybe people were relieved that they were there? Or I did see some video footage of what seemed to be a formal apology to the tribal elders on behalf of some of the veterans that were there. Can you describe that dynamic?
Yeah, it did change things at the camp. So that apology ceremony took place at the casino, at the pavilion, during the blizzard. That was the first night. So all those conditions that I was describing, like that was the scene around that video that you saw. Yeah, there were a lot of tears that were shed when that apology happened. It was really an amazing moment, I think, also for a lot of the veterans out there. You know, a lot of them signed up. I talked to some, they signed up to go to war to protect their country, and they wound up feeling like they were watching their friends and their brothers and sisters die, not for the American people, but for other sort of corporate interests or oil interests. So for them, this was like the first time that they felt like they were really doing something for the people. That was really powerful.
So since this decision has been passed down from the Army Corps of Engineers that the easement is not going to be granted to the DAPL company, there have been statements that have come out from the chairman, Archambault, asking people from the Ochetee-Sakowin camp to leave. Do you feel like that is happening, or is that the direction that things are moving in? Because I'm seeing conflicting reports. It feels like some people are saying that, no, they're staying over winter, and then the tribal council chairman's asking people to leave. Can you describe that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the main fire, the sacred fire that was started at Ochetee-Sakowin camp was put out yesterday. So that camp, that fire, that organization and that spirit and energy has gone out, and a lot of people are moving out. as they're able to. You know, logistics of just getting out of camp, of gathering your things and taking down your tent. Breaking camp is really challenging in these conditions because of the cold and because of the weather. So that camp is the northernmost camp, which is on Army Corps land. When you hear people say main camp or the camp, generally they're referring to that camp. But there's been a new fire that has been lit at the camp, and they're calling themselves All Nations Camp. So that just happened yesterday, like last night. So there's still about 1,000 people at that main camp. There's about 1,000 people at Sacred Stone Camp, which is just a little bit south of there. And between what's now All Nations Camp and Sacred Stone Camp, there's also Rosebud Camp, which is about 3,000 people. So rough estimate, 2,300 people are still out there between the three camps. People are from, I'll call it the main camp, people are making preparations to leave, some people. There's also close to 1,000 people that are staying. They're committed to staying until Dakota Access Pipeline Company, their workers, but in the law enforcement and mercenaries that are protecting them until they move out.
And so another decision came through on Friday. Energy Transfer Partners was actually in the middle of suing the Army Corps of Engineers for delaying the decision about the easement. So that was, I think, something that was already happening at the time that that decision came down. And the judge ruled that the DAPL company will not be able to expedite the process of trying to hear out Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and the Army Corps of Engineer. They're putting in statements, I believe that, and then I'm stumbling in my mind trying to remember this, but I think they're going back on January 31st. Is that right? To look at this case again, but it looks like this project's at least delayed until January 31st. Am I understanding that right?
Yeah, so that is mostly correct. The Energy Transfer Partners, which owns and operates the Dakota Access Pipeline Limited Liability Corporation, they sued to continue the project. That's correct. They have, and they were also suing for an expedited decision because of how much money they were losing every week on this project. So in their court statements, they say that they're losing $20 million per week, $20 million every week because of delays in this project. The federal judge said that essentially that's none of her concern how much money they're losing. They don't have the permit and they don't have grounds to expedite a decision based on their financial situation. So they've got to submit a briefing, basically their argument, by the end of January. And then the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and the Army Corps of Engineers have 10 days after that, so early February, week and a half into February, to submit their arguments and their briefing, and then that'll all get considered probably mid to late February.
Okay, so it does feel like maybe this is at least being upheld by the federal government at some level, this decision to stop the project. Do you know, is the DAPL company, have they stopped drilling at this point?
There's mixed indications. People at camp, which is within earshot, but not within eyesight of the drill pad, due to some hills that are just to the north and the geography and topography, they're saying that they can hear machinery equipment working just in the past couple nights. It's been verified, confirmed. Exactly what that means as far as where they're drilling or how far they're drilling is not certain because there's no observers on the ground at the drill site. There's a concrete barricade with different layers of barbed wire, razor wire, that is still in place at Blackwater Bridge, which is the site that a lot of you saw that footage coming out of just a few weeks ago, where there's the water cannons. That bridge is still closed down, and then the drill site and drill pad is a little ways down from that, and that is basically the base of operations for Dakota Access Pipeline and law enforcement that's protecting them. So nobody's actually able to get in to see the drill pad and to see what's going on. So how far they're able to drill and if they're actually stopping at where the easement says they're supposed to stop at, or if they're going to go under that is, if they were to drill into the river, that would be illegal at this point. The company has made a public statement that says that they are committed to finishing the project no matter what, whether they obey the law or not, I guess is anybody's guess at this point.
Yeah, so there was rumors floating around that the DAPL company, if they continue drilling without these permits, that they face a fine of what, like $50,000 a day? If they continue to do that. And I'm not sure if these rumors are confirmed, but it seemed like there was suspicion out there that they might be thinking that that is more worth their time than losing the $20 million a week that they say they're losing.
Right. I've heard that rumor as well. I can't confirm the source or authenticity of whether that might be true or not. But I will say that from my perspective, them as a company, as a corporation, the money is all that it's about. You know, they're an oil company, but oil is just their means for getting money. They don't care about the land. They only care about the law as insofar as to what extent it stops them from making money. That's their only concern, their only focus. So I wouldn't put it past them if that was within their business plan to eat a fine and continue to make money if it was still profitable. One of the things that I do want to share with everybody that was shared to me by Gary Dorr, who's a Nez Perce Iñiku. He was one of the primary organizers that stopped the Keystone XL pipeline. He said that at the beginning of January, and why this date is so important, beginning of January next year, is that the Dakota Access Pipeline basically defaults on its contracts and they will have to renegotiate the rates for the oil that they're supposed to be pumping with the oil producers. And this is important because the contract that they're locked into right now, that is still good if they started pumping oil today, is set at 2014 prices. That's in their contract. If they break the contract, then they have to renegotiate at today's prices, or I mean, it's going to be 2017 by that point, but they'll have to renegotiate with now prices, which are half what they were in 2014. So one of the reasons why they're pushing so hard and why they're scared about all the delays in this process is it doesn't just affect when they can start pumping. It affects how much they're going to make per barrel, per gallon, once that oil starts flowing.
Thank you so much again, Lewis Gordon, we're talking to. He just returned from Standing Rock. If you're just tuning in, I'll be podcasting this up at khum.com. And he's sharing, I feel like there's just been a lot of information coming out of Standing Rock. And it's always nice to check in with someone who has been there. You are up on Native issues, and I appreciate you sharing your perspective with us. And I feel like there's this benefit for Standing Rock going on at the jam on Thursday. Is the struggle over, or what do you feel like we should be doing as a community here in Humboldt? How should we be taking the news that's coming out of Standing Rock in the last week from your perspective, and what work still needs to be done, or what's next for us as a community?
Yeah, keep it up. Humboldt County has been amazing at fundraising. We've seen the support that has directly come out of fundraisers all over town, at the Mateel, at Richard Goat. There's going to be one at the Jam coming up pretty soon. So thanks to all the organizers and everybody who's come up and who's come out and who's put their money where their mouth is when it comes to supporting water protectors. The struggle is still on. It is not over. There's still people at camp who desperately need your support spiritually, socially, politically, financially. And there are some people that are leaving, but there's still lots of people that are staying there, that are standing their ground, that are committed to peaceful, nonviolent, prayerful action. Dakota Access Pipeline is not dead. Maybe put on hold for a little bit, but it's still going out. So I just want to, just keep it up. There's a lot of different, you know, GoFundMe sites out over the past couple of months, and I realized that's been a point of maybe confusion for people about where the money is going and who's really accountable for what.
Yeah, so, could you touch on that? Like, what specific, in your opinion, what specific GoFundMe sites are, like, really worth funding that you, as a person there, see that money being put into action and really helping the water protectors the most?
Sure. So I can, really hold up the Medicaid Healers Council, which is going through they're operating as a nonprofit. They have a fiscal sponsor based out of Florida. So donations to them are tax deductible. I can also really hold up a group that is associated with Chase Ironize, who is out there. He's on the ground. He's from Standing Rock. He was a recent U.S. congressional representative from North Dakota. Fortunately, he didn't win that fight, but he's taking all that energy and putting it into organizing supplies, transport, shipping, and receiving all of the donations that have been coming in from all over the world for all the camps. He's really focused on supporting all three camps, and he's not really interested in the sort of inter-camp politics or what's going on or who's from which res or who's native or who's non-native. His group is really doing great, awesome work. They're called LR Inspire, and my organization, Seventh Generation Fund, actually serves as their fiscal sponsor. So we receive incoming donations for them. We hold it within our account, and then we fiscally administrate their funds. And for me personally, I almost wish, for the point of just talking to people about them and the good work they're doing and asking people or fund people that they want to support groups financially to send money there, personally, I almost wish that we weren't their fiscal sponsor, because there's been a lot of, self-dealing and sort of lack of accountability with a lot of the fundraising. So I'm not telling people to donate to that group for me or for my organization, but because I really, truly believe in and support the work that they're doing.
Okay. Thank you, Lewis Gordon, again for joining us and sharing your experience that you had at Standing Rock. Welcome home. I'm sure it feels good to be in not negative 17 degree weather.
It feels awesome.
Right? You can feel your eyeballs and you don't have to wear goggles. That's a plus for sure. Well, I appreciate it. And please keep in touch with me and let me know how things are progressing as you receive updates from people that you're connected with there. And let me know how our community can step up and what's going on. I know sometimes that it's kind of hard looking at, I feel like social media has been kind of the hub of what is going on from the Indigenous mm-hmm. perspective at Standing Rock. And sometimes it's really hard to decipher exactly who should we be listening to or what should we be doing and what's best supporting the cause. So I appreciate you going out there and helping the water protectors and going out there yourself and checking in with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
For sure. And we'll be podcasting this conversation up at khum.com. There is a benefit if you want to continue to support the efforts at Standing Rock at the Jam that's going on the 15th, which is Thursday. And it's going to be an all ages show from 6 until 9. And then from 9 on out, it is a 21 and up show, but they are accepting monetary donations. 100% of the door is going to support efforts at Standing Rock, and then they are taking, I think, $1 off of every drink that you order is going to go straight towards the efforts at Standing Rock as well. I'm going to go ahead and get a song on. I want to thank you for tuning in to 104.3 and 104.7 KHUM Cut in Eureka, Arcata. Streaming online at khum.com.